Your skin is clammy. This grit behind your eyeballs. A solitary owl hoots. The world lays creepily silent.
Children of the night.
Then a shadowy figure emerges from the darkness.
The problem is 99% of the planet doesn't know who he is.
Who is that guy?
A rebel. A guardian of everything that's fair in this dog-eat-dog world. One man with an opinion, a studio hotline, and 5 hours to kill.
Let's do this thing.
Out of the ball. Around Australia on the Triple M Network. Triple M! Welcome to The Night Shift with Luke Boner.
Good morning, Australia. Liam Flanagan here, filling in for Luke Boner all this week. It's hump day. We've reached the halfway point of the week, which means it's all downhill from here into the weekend, but we've still got plenty to tuck into this morning. You can call us anytime on 133353. You can hit us up on the Facebook page, The Night Shift on Triple M, or on Twitter, we are at MMM Night Shift. So get involved, send us a message, give us a call. We'd love to have a chat with you this morning. The Arias have just come to a conclusion in Sydney, which, I mean, explains the constant sniffing sound I can hear. Reckon there are probably some decent lines for bathroom cubicles at after parties everywhere around Sydney at the moment. But this guy.
That's the way it's gonna be, little darling. We'll be riding on the horses, yeah.
Darryl Braithwaite, the bloody legend, has been inducted into the ARIA Hall of Fame. Good on you, Darryl. You absolute bloody legend. It's important that Darryl's being recognised, I think, because I don't think it's a name that's going to stick around too long. I think Darryl's on the way out. I can't see too many people having babies now or in the future and naming them Darryl these days, you know, or Murray for that matter. If anyone has called their baby Darryl or Murray, give us a call, 133353. I'd love to hear from you because I don't think I'd be able to stop myself from laughing if someone said, here's my baby, what's its name, Darryl. I think it would just prop me into a little bit of a giggle. We're actually going to speak to Triple M's head of rock, Jackie Kosolke, a bit later on. She's going to give us a full wrap of who the big winners were at the Arias tonight. That's if she's upright, of course. It's always a big night for those in the music industry. But because the Arias have just wrapped up, I want to start our very own music awards. Let's call them the 90s for the night shift people. For all you people listening out there, I want to create a new music award. Let's call them the 90s. The 90s here on the night shift on Triple M. We're going to take nominations. We're going to take nominations for best song, best band, best solo performer, best live performance. What's the best gig you've been to? 133353. If you want to nominate a band, a song, a performer, or a gig that you've been to for the first official and probably last, let's be honest, 90 awards. Lots more to talk about outside of the Arias, obviously. Don Burke, more people coming forward with claims of inappropriate behaviour against the former Channel 9 star, Don Burke. Zipporah Malka, the model formerly known as Kate Fisher, has come forward and given her insight into the situation. Susie O'Neill, Olympic swimmer, and a current affair reporter, Alison Petrovsky, has also shared her experiences working with Don during his time at 2UE. 133353. Had a lot of strong opinions on the Don Burke situation last night. Obviously, with the more news coming out today, would love to get your thoughts on it as more and more women come forward and share their experiences working with Don. And also, I want to give you an opportunity to be Prime Minister of this country. Yes, I can't actually officially offer you the role, but in a hypothetical way. Yesterday morning on the Hot Breakfast, Triple M Melbourne's breakfast program, Eddie Maguire was given the opportunity courtesy of Will Anderson, one of the other hosts on the show. This is what happened on that breakfast show yesterday morning.
You're always telling us your theories off air about how the country should be run better.
Exactly.
Why not Maguire for Prime Minister? So I'm going to set you a little challenge, Ed. By the end of the show, I want you to come up with a list of five policies that if you were to be elected Prime Minister of this country.
Seriously?
What are your first five things you're going to do? And we're going to, during this show, Eddie for PM.
So that was the challenge Will Anderson set for Eddie Maguire on the Hot Breakfast in Melbourne yesterday morning. I've got all of Eddie's policies that I'll share with you a bit later on. But I'd love to know, 133353, what would you do? What would be that number one policy you'd put in place if you were in charge of this country? It doesn't have to be serious. It can be serious if it's something really near and dear to your heart that you think is quite a serious issue that needs to be addressed and isn't being addressed. I'd love to hear it. But if it's something fun as well, something a little bit silly, something that you think would just make Australia a bit better place to live, I'd love to hear from you. 133353, what would you do if you were Prime Minister just for a day and you could implement some policies? And also, I need a little bit of life advice, right? Because there's an offer on the table at the moment from my daughter's daycare. They need someone to play the role of Santa. Only for a day, I think it's only for an hour or so. The email's gone out, and I think I'm about to accept. They've got the suit. I don't have to supply my own. But I just want to check before I accept. I want to check with you, the listeners here on the night shift. I mean, what's the worst that could happen? Have you been Santa before? Can you share with me some horror stories of what could go wrong if I accept this gig? 133353, or hit us up on the Facebook, The Night Shift on Triple M. I think I'm going to take the gig. I mean, it doesn't pay, but I think I'm going to take the gig. 133353, give us a call. We'd love to hear from you here. It's The Night Shift on Triple M. The Arias have just wound up here, so there's rock stars crawling all over the place in Sydney. But we've started up our very own awards here on The Night Shift. We're calling them the 90s. As you can tell, we haven't put a lot of effort into the name, but we want to hear it from you. If you've got a nomination for the best song, best band, best solo performer, best gig you've been to, love to hear from you. 133353. Paul from Cairns. Good morning, Paul.
Yeah, good morning. How you going, mate?
I'm going well, buddy. What's happening up in Cairns at this time of the morning?
It's still about 25 degrees.
Oh, we spoke to you yesterday. You bastard. You've got your beautiful North Queensland weather.
Yeah, I've had about 3 showers to cool off.
Oh, I'm very jealous of you, Paul. Very jealous. Yeah. What's going on, Paul? What do you want to have a chat about?
Oh, well, the best concert I went to was Cold Chisel in 1980. I was about 20 years old. In Melbourne, Sydney Mine Music Bowl, was about 100,000 people there.
I'll tell you what, that's a strong nomination for the 90s straight off the top.
Yeah.
So 1980 it was?
Yep. I was 20 years old, and it was at the Sydney Mine Music Bowl in Melbourne.
Like, great venue.
And it was 100,000 people there, and it just went off.
So. Oh, and that was right in the Chisel heyday, wasn't it? That's when they were at there.
Yeah, they were really big. Yeah.
Yeah, Raff and Grungy. And what, do you remember?
They had the East album and, you know, huge.
Well, Jimmy was at the Arias tonight. You won't believe this, Paul. I think we're going to speak to Triple M's head of rock, Jackie Kosolke, a bit later on about this. But I think he picked up an Aria for a Best Kids album.
Yeah, I actually missed Aries. I'm having a sleep, but anyway.
You're having too many bloody showers.
Your program.
Hey, Paul, that's a very solid early nomination for the 90s.
And I've got a good Santa story, if you like.
Oh, yes, far away. This is. I've been offered.
Yeah, go for it. Side. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've done the local Santa gig at the local shopping centre at Stocklands in Herbal here for the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And the worst thing is the mums. Carrying on, my kids first, and blah blah blah. The mothers are the worst.
So how do I combat this? Because I've been offered for those of you who missed it, I've been offered an opportunity to be Santa at my kids' daycare. I'm thinking about taking it. I just want to know if there's any tips of the trade. So how do I handle the mums?
I don't know, because I scream, I was next in line, and then some of the kids, they've got smelly nappies, and just put up with that.
Paul, you are not painting a delightful picture of being Santa.
No, it gets better, though.
Okay.
And I got paid $50 a day, so that was all right.
I don't think I'm getting paid.
I got paid, so it was good Christmas money for me.
Paul, go and have another bloody shout. Mate, thank you very much for calling in.
All right, thanks, mate.
For calling in, Paul. This is the Night Shift here on Triple M. 133353 is our number if you want to have a chat. Greg, good morning, Greg.
How are you, mate?
I'm going well. Where do we find you this morning?
I'm in Quarama.
Quarama?
Yeah.
Whereabouts is Quarama?
It's just north of Margie's.
Southwest of WA. Yeah, beautiful. You've got a nomination for the 90s, I believe.
Yeah. Late 90s, probably 98, 99, best concert ever. I've been to some big ones, but the best one ever was the Waifs when they first started. They came across from Albany to Esperance when I was living there.
WA band.
Yeah, WA band, the Waifs, and from Albany. And they came across just as young crew. I think they're actually too young to even be in the pub, but they played a gig at the Esperance Hotel. Yeah. It was a very intimate little thing, but I'll never forget it. It was the best concert ever, and I've followed them ever since.
Oh, wow. How old were you when you were at the gig?
probably about 28.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Sometimes, often the 20s is that sort of period where the gigs you go to in your 20s are the ones that really stick with you. Because I think you're old enough to really appreciate the music you're going to see, and maybe you're not quite as loose and carried away as the ones you went to as a teenager. But the Waifs, they had their really big song was London Still.
Yeah, yeah, that was one of the originals, as well as When I Die.
Fisherman's Daughter as well. Yeah.
Fisherman's Daughter and Lighthouse. They were just amazing. We were right there.
They were a cracking gig. What was the venue that it was at? The Esperance Hotel?
Yeah. Really intimate little venue.
How many people do you reckon were at the gig?
Probably about 80.
Okay, so quite a small gig.
Yeah, really small. So easy to the bar, straight out the front. Got to talk to them in between sets and all that sort of thing. It was just really cool. And like I say, I've been to heaps of their gigs ever since.
That's at the really opposite end of the scale. We just spoke to Paul, who's up in Cairns. He went and saw Chisel at the Sydney Mine Music Bowl with 100,000 people there, he reckons. And there was only 80 at this hotel.
Yeah, that's why I thought I'd ring, because most people probably talk about the big gigs they've been to, but this one was awesome and was the most intimate.
And as you say, the importance of being able to get to and from the bar without too much pushing and shoving, it's key.
Absolute key, mate.
Fantastic. Greg, thank you so much for the call. Enjoy the rest of your morning over there in beautiful WA.
No worries. Cheers, man.
All right, Greg. This is the Night Shift on Triple M. Lots of calls coming through. Scott in Brisbane. Good morning, Scott.
Hey, how are you, mate?
I'm going well. How are you?
Good, mate. Good. Just working.
Working, what do you do with yourself?
Spray painter, sign company.
Okay, very good, very good. And are we near the end of the shift or just at the beginning?
Nah, mate, near the end, finish at 12.
Okay, perfect, almost there. Yeah. The downhill run, couple of knockoffs before you go to bed?
Yeah, probably, yeah, like always.
Beautiful. Scott, I think you've got some advice for me on the Santa front.
Yeah, mate, I was played Santa last year at my kids' daycare and I'm doing it again this year.
Right.
All
right. Well, hit me with some advice. Any words of wisdom?
No words of wisdom. Just get your ho hos going.
Ho ho. Is it three hos or two?
You got a daughter?
I've got a daughter.
Yeah. Well, just don't look her in the eye because I'm very worried about my son recognizing me this year. So
I was thinking about this actually because how old's your son?
He's 2.5 now, so he was 1.5 last year when we done it.
Right. Well, so my daughter's 1.5 now. She
should be okay.
Okay. Yeah, I thought about that because I thought, well, she's probably a little bit young to understand the concept of Santa anyway. But I thought, I reckon if I pick her up, even if I've got the hat and the beard and everything else on, she'll probably still recognise me.
No, my son came and sat on my knee and he was good.
Okay.
He didn't recognise me, so.
Right. Right. Okay. Oh, that is a good word of advice. So now, ho ho hos. There's you got to go three of them.
Yeah, but three of them, mate, and just be prepared for kids to look at you in amazement and come and cuddle you. That's what'll happen.
Oh, cuddle. Any tears?
Oh, there's a few tears. A few kids wouldn't sit on my lap.
Oh, okay.
A few kids did. Lots of people taking photos, but I was quite nervous, so I just knocked down a few Jim Beam cans before I went down. So only two.
I love it. A couple of Jim Beam cans before I get there. That is words to live by, Scotty. Thank you so much for the call, mate. You enjoy the rest of your morning.
Mate. Have a good night.
You too, buddy. This is the Night Shift on Triple M. That's fantastic advice he's just handed me there. I was genuinely worried my daughter might recognise me when I don the outfit. Laurie, good morning, Laurie.
Good morning, Luke. How are you today?
Laurie, I'm sure Luke's probably very well, but it's actually Liam here filling in for Luke this week.
Oh, Liam, sorry.
No need to apologise, mate. I'm merely a brief caretaker in the studio while Luke's having a bit of a breakdown in Tassie. So, Laurie, where do we find you this morning? You there, Laurie? We still got you?
5.5 hours south of Sydney, so.
Okay.
I'm here.
Very good, very good. And now, you have called up because we were introducing yesterday morning on the Melbourne Triple M Breakfast Show, the Hot Breakfast with Eddie Maguire. Eddie was challenged by one of his co-hosts, Will Anderson, to come up with some policies if he was Prime Minister. I'm going to share those with the audience a bit later on. But, Laurie, you've got a policy if you were Prime Minister.
Yeah, now, if I was Prime Minister, firstly, I'd get there and make taxes fairer. Like, it seems to me that the richer you are, the less tax you pay. The poorer you are, the more you pay.
Mm.
That's how it appears.
Yeah.
Right? And that's how, you know, point blank, that keeps going on about it. Now, I don't understand how rich people should pay less tax. The poorer you are, the more you have to pay. I don't understand that. I don't get it.
Look, Laurie, I'm not by no means an expert on it either. I do understand, you know, my basic understanding of income tax at the very least is that the more you earn, the more you should pay. But I think it's fairly apparent that there are some people at the upper end of town who probably find loopholes to avoid paying what they should under the income tax laws.
Yeah, well, this is true. But yeah, the government, the way they do their taxes is just put them out there. So the more money you earn, the less you seem to pay. And not only that, when you go to do a put your taxes in, you seem to be paying the government instead of getting anything back.
Hey, Laurie, if you jumped in and were Prime Minister and put that policy in place, I'd be in all support of it, mate. I'd be right on board with you.
Now, secondly, I'd concentrate on the disadvantaged people that...
You're just dropping out on me, Laurie, there. I think you're saying that you'd be concentrating on the disadvantaged parts of the community. Yeah, I think we've got a bit of a bad line there with Laurie. We might see if we can't get him back up. 133353, we've been talking areas. We've been talking what would you do if you were Prime Minister for day, or if you've got some advice for me as I potentially head towards being Santa at my daughter's daycare in a couple of weeks' time. 133353 is the number, or you can hit us up on Facebook, The Night Shift on Triple M. Stick around. We are going to have a chat with Triple M's head of rock, Jackie Kosolke, who was on the ground at the areas. She can report back on all the action. We're also going to have a bit of a chat with Graham Wynn, who's our employment expert. There's a few stories that might be of interest to you out there, especially if you're an apprentice tradie in Queensland. You should definitely stick around and listen. This is The Night Shift on Triple M. Yeah, the hotline certainly is running hot. Liam Flanagan here, filling in on The Night Shift for Luke Boner all this week. 133353 is our number. You can give us a call at any time, or hit us up on the Facebook page of The Night Shift on Triple M if you can't get yourself to a phone. We're taking your calls on everything from ARIAs to the Don Burke developments that continue as more and more people come forward with their claims about their interactions with Don Burke from over the years. And I'm up for advice as I entertain the prospect of being Santa at my daughter's daycare. But we've got James in Brisbane online. Good morning, James.
Good morning. How are you going?
I'm going very well. What part of Brisbane do we find you in this morning?
Wellington Point and the Redlands.
Oh, beautiful
area.
Beautiful,
yeah,
absolutely.
Beautiful area.
Absolutely. What are you doing up at this time?
Oh, I just finished work.
What do you do with yourself?
Police officer.
Ah, very good.
Yeah.
Very good. What sort of, question for you, James, right?
Because
No. I'm not going to ask you to go into an area that you might get yourself in trouble. But my friends and I have been playing this game of late regarding police officers. None of us are police officers. But we've been trying to rank the idea of what type of police officer we'd like to be. You know, if there was a choice between water in your cars, out on the highway, mounted police, or bike police, which one would we want to be? Is there a hierarchy within the police force? Like if a mounted police, you know, down the bottom of the pecking order, or is it cooler to be one of the motorbike cops as opposed to just in your regular car police?
No, I don't think so. I think every different position has a different purpose,
okay,
you know, to some degree. So it just depends what people passionate about, I guess, and right. how they want to serve the community.
And where your skill set lies. No, fair enough. And James, yeah. I don't know if you played cricket growing up, but you straight batted that answer very, very well. So,
yes.
Well done. Hey, James, what did you want to have a chat about this morning?
Well, I would love to see Prime Ministers change a few things. One thing I'd love to see would be for them to consider whether it would be viable for first home buyers to access their super to put, you know, towards a deposit for a house.
Yeah,
because that's the struggle nowadays, just getting the deposit.
Absolutely.
Because in a lot of places, the payments that you make for rent are, you know, a good part of a mortgage repayment. And if you could access your super and put some of that towards a deposit for a house, then, you know, you'd potentially have people not renting and paying off their own homes, which is the Aussie dream, really, isn't it?
133353, if anyone can actually, if there's anyone out there who can better explain that, because you're right, housing prices around Australia have never been higher, particularly in the eastern states. And the dream of owning a home is becoming, well, is getting further and further away for a lot of young Australians. But I thought that you were able to access your super to use as a deposit. I thought I could be completely off base here, but I thought it was sort of a personal choice type of situation.
Yeah, I'm not aware of that. I believe that if you are in default of your mortgage and things are looking pretty bad, then I believe you can make some sort of application to the court to access your super to pay the debt that you're...
Oh, I see.
You know,
so it's a breaking case of emergency sort of thing.
Yeah, but I don't believe you can just use it as a deposit.
As
and
a
look,
deposit.
You know, people would probably say that then you're going to have people with no super in 30 or 40 years' time, which, you know, so that's the other thing.
Which
but,
is another problem.
Yeah, it'd be worth looking into.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Really, yeah. Really interesting idea. James, this is obviously, of course, off the back of... we're going to play you some of that audio shortly. Eddie Maguire on the Triple M Hot Breakfast Show down in Melbourne yesterday was challenged by his co-host Will Anderson to come up with the four policies he would implement if he went for PM. And this is off the back of the fact that our politicians are dropping like flies, James, because it turns out half of them have got dual citizenship. Now,
yes,
a question without notice here for you, James. I think I understand the reasoning of why they can't hold dual citizenship, but do you have a problem with it? With our politicians
personally,
being dual citizens?
Personally, I don't. No.
I can understand how a conflict of interest might arise, but
yeah,
for the most part, I don't really see the big deal in our politicians having dual citizenship. Anyway, James, thank you so much for the call. Are you going home to hit the hay and shift's done
definitely.
For the night? All right.
Yep.
Well,
yep,
you cool. drive safe, James. Thanks for the call.
Thanks. Have a good night.
You too. This is the Night Shift on Triple M. We've got another call coming through. A lot of calls coming through from Brisbane this morning, particularly active up there in Queensland. Brad, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm very, very well. Where do we find you this morning?
East Brisbane, just up from the Gabba Cricket Grounds after we...
Yeah, after the scene of
week.
The scene of the crime, if for the English fans. Did you get along to the cricket at any point?
No. I just can sit out on the veranda and hear it all.
Oh, fantastic. How good is that?
Yeah.
That's the dream. Hey, Brad, what did you want to have a chat about this morning?
Well, mainly the chat about the music.
Yes, we've created the ARIA. ARIA's finished last night, and we've created the 90s. We are giving our own 90s. Music awards. We're looking for nominations on best song, best band, best live performance you've been to, anything. So what do you got for me, Brad?
I've been to heaps of live performances, but the one I want to pick up is I never got to it because he actually did pass away back in the late 70s, early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
His name's Tommy Boland. Tommy Boland. He's actually Mark Boland's brother, who was T-Rex.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, T-Rex, Mark Boland, although, like, T-Rex went off. But Mark had a couple albums, but the one big album, Tommy.
Yeah.
Called Private Eyes.
Okay.
And it was just such a brilliant album, so well composed. There was just so much about it,
Talk to me.
You know, a couple of years later, he passed away, and
I've never heard of him personally, but I'm sure there are people out there who have heard of him. Or give me a little bit of background on him. What sort of music did he play?
He was more. It was contemporary rock. and stuff. I don't know if you've heard of Ian Hunter. Well, Ian Hunter, yeah, Once Bitten, Twice Shy, yep. All that. In that era.
Okay, in that era. And yeah, producer Jess has flicked me through some information on Tommy. It says here, wow, yep. He played with, I mean, he supported Deep Purple.
Yeah, Deep Purple.
Led Zeppelin.
Yep.
Wow, okay. So, yeah, he wasn't, it's not like this was an underground sort of guy. He was a very successful musician.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my word. And he wrote a lot of stuff, I believe, and composed, like, the music as well, not just the lyrics.
And did you ever get to see him live, Brad?
No, he was supposed to come out here, and then about the year before he was coming out, that's when he passed away.
Oh, that's. I mean, it's devastating when anyone passes away, but and, the fact that you were so close to getting to see him in concert.
Especially after yesterday, getting, you know, Malcolm going.
Yeah, the funeral for Malcolm Young.
Yeah, so, it's just sort of
it seems to be an occupational hazard with that rock and roll lifestyle. Jesse just sent me through some more information. He only died when he was 25 years of age of a drug overdose.
That's correct. Yeah.
Such a life cut so short. He seems like he achieved so much so early.
He could have gone on to be one of the best.
Yeah.
And I'm sure if anybody downloads a bit of the music from him or goes out and gets his CD, I'm sure they'll, even today, the young kids today will appreciate the sound.
All right. Well, there you've got a tip there from Brad in Brisbane. If anybody is listening, go and check him out. Tommy Bolan is his name.
Tommy Bolan.
We've had a couple of nominations
album was Private Eye.
Private Eye.
Yeah.
Private Eyes. We've had a couple of nominations for the best live gig ever. The Waifs over at the Esperance Hotel in Perth. We've had Cold Chisel at the Sydney Meyer Music Bowl in Melbourne. And Brad's throwing out Tommy Bolan for best artist.
Yeah, best artist. And I can throw Cold Chisel out there too at the Institute in Toowoomba.
Right. What year was that?
They very first started. Oh, my God.
Before 1980?
Yeah. When they very first started, there was they came on. There was Dragon. There was an American or Pommy band, Hush. They were called, I think. They came out. They played. There was about six bands played at the Refect at the Toowoomba Institute back then.
The Toowoomba Institute was that? I've never been there personally. A good venue
the
for
Institute
it.
It was a great venue. It was the big hall where they used to sit down and do their exams, everyone at the Institute.
They cleared out the kids from the Institute so that Cold Chisel and Dragon could come in and play.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And it was full on. Yeah. It was great.
Brad, thank you so much for the call, and thank you for educating us about Tommy Bolan. I'll certainly be going and having a listen.
Have a listen. And one other little point.
Yes.
For you.
Yes.
As Santa Claus.
Oh, fantastic. Hit me.
Don't glue the beard on because the kids will pull at it.
Hold on. No, sorry. Stop for a second because, Brad, I hadn't entertained the prospect of gluing the beard on, but you telling me this makes me think that you've glued the beard on.
It had elastic.
Yeah.
You know, the white mustache, the white big beard.
Yeah.
And it had this stupid elastic and everything. I thought, what the hell? So I glued it to my lips and glued it to my chin and everything like that.
No, and Brad,
And I sat there and the kids were all saying, is that real? Rip, rip, rip.
What? Yeah. Hold on. No, what glue did you use? Like clag?
No, super glue.
Oh, Brad, come on, mate. What? Oh, no.
I'm talking 25 years ago.
Brad, that doesn't excuse the fact you super glued the beard to your face. How did you get it off?
It kept falling off. Because the elastic wasn't any good. So
It's just
scraped off, eventually. But
you were scraping
by the time all the kids were pulling at it, it was got a bit painful by the end of the day, end of the night.
I could imagine, Brad. Brad, thank you very much. So far, my advice has been to watch out for the mums, drink a couple of cans of Jim Beam beforehand, and not super glue the beard to my face. So I'm flying. I think I'm ready for this one, Brad.
You got it?
Yeah, absolutely, mate.
Sounds good.
Appreciate the call, Brad. You enjoy the rest of your morning. This is the Night Shift on Triple M. You can call us at any time you like, 133353 to get involved. Lots to chat about. And something that I did want to, we've already taken some calls on it, the idea of what would you do if you were Prime Minister? Because yesterday morning on the Hot Breakfast, it's Triple M Melbourne's breakfast show with Eddie Maguire, Luke Darcy and Will Anderson. Will Anderson challenged Eddie. He was having a conversation about the amount of politicians that have fallen foul of the dual citizenship constitutional laws. And Will Anderson challenged Eddie to frame his policies if Eddie were to be Prime Minister. This is how it all kicked off yesterday morning.
You're always telling us your theories off air about how the country should be run better.
Exactly.
Why not Maguire for Prime Minister? So I'm going to set you a little challenge, Ed. By the end of the show, I want you to come up with a list of five policies that if you were to be elected Prime Minister of this country...
Seriously?
What are your first five things you're going to do? And we're going to, during this show, Eddie for PM.
Okay, so we'll set the challenge to Eddie. And I'm setting the challenge to you out there as well. 133353. I don't need five policies. I just want you to say, I just want to hear, what would you do if you were Prime Minister for a day? What's the one thing you would say, we absolutely must get this done? This was Eddie's first policy related to education.
See, I see things like education as not a cost. I see education as an investment in the future. So I would go back to free tertiary education unless you failed a subject. Then you pay. So if you want to go to university and be the Australian Crown Lager drinking champion, you can pay for it. But if you want to get in and get it done quickly and get out with your degree, I'll tax you down the track when you're actually working. But I need you to be smart and be driving Australia's economy, whether it's through TAFE and into jobs, and have a well-educated and a well-serviced workforce coming through that will then facilitate the tax and the investment going through down the track.
So that's Eddie Maguire's policy on education if he was PM. I love it. It's a simple policy. It incentivises young people to work hard. And as he said, the payoff comes later in life when, because of the free education, the government would then be able to recoup the costs via the income tax that these well-educated people are paying. I love the idea of free tertiary education or TAFE education because it encourages the youth of Australia to, you know, further themselves, learn more, and follow a passion that they're truly interested. So that was Eddie's policy on education. 133353, I'd love to hear your thoughts on it. He's not actually running. This is him hypothetically speaking. If he was running, who knows? He may go there. This was his policy number two.
So law and order. Now, what I think we need to do, though, is there's a bit of a link to the last education policy. And my frontline troops against law and order issues are teachers. They're the front row troops for me. So what I'd be doing is pouring a lot more money into primary education and also social welfare around primary schools, because that's where the kids either get lost in the system, whether they've got bad socioeconomic backgrounds or even just having some parents who might be under pressure or may have fallen through the cracks themselves. So we go in there and we get the kids coming through. We put the right infrastructure into the right areas to make sure the kids have got hope. You never see a kid with a full tummy or with hope in their heart getting themselves into trouble. So that would be my first go there. Mental health is the next big issue in law and order. If people got mental health, I'll do what I'll do. I'll reverse Jeff Kennett. I'll put the mental institutions back into play. Some people just need to have mental health. They can't be just wandering around going to shopping centres or riding on our trains and our public transport 24/7 looking for a bright light.
So you're going to build more asylums?
No, I know. I'll get a proper mental health system in play.
Okay.
The second part of that is I'll look at some of the issues that are, I believe, health issues, not law and order issues. So I'd have a good look at decriminalisation of some drugs. Now, I'm an anti-drug person from way back, but the war on drugs is lost. I'd be having a good look at that, and I'd do a royal commission into how that could be rolled out and how we could actually get the money to be able to pay for all this by actually taxing these people instead of it going into the pockets of organised crime.
Hey, is this policy number two, three, four,
or five? This is all rolled
into
one.
This is
all
two. This is number two. Six-part policy number two.
I think there's big parts to it. And the last part of my
Darce, I heard decriminalising drugs. I'm in. He's already got my vote.
But the last part of my law and order policy is there's some people out there who are bad bastards.
Yeah.
And I'll give them the best kicking of their lives. They go in and they do not come out. Simple as that. If you do things against people's liberty and their life, and you threaten people, particularly women and children, you get a big slap from me, and you do not come back into society for a long time.
And when he says they go in and they don't come out, he means into the Collingwood cheer squad.
So that was Eddie's policy number two. That was his law and order policy. So we've had his education policy, his law and order policy. Interesting to hear Eddie say that the war on drugs is lost. I thought that was an interesting takeaway. But we're starting to see an idea of how Eddie would behave if he was Prime Minister. He's got two more policies. This next one is about energy in Australia.
I've got an energy policy for us.
Okay, here we go.
This is big news. I'm going to galvanise the Greenies as well. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have a Green Party anymore. You're all going to come to my party, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, what I'm going to do, first up, now, there's a little bit of Donald Trump in this one because I'm going to recut the deals. I reckon we've been absolutely stiffed in recent times. Mm-hmm. I think we have just bent over and copped it right between the eyes from the big mining companies. But what I would do there, right, is one, I'd get that sorted out. I think we've privatised too much of our energy. We need to keep control of that here. And I'd build a sovereign fund with that. Now, what we do is we get gouged by the petrol prices going up all the time. We're getting gouged at the moment by the energy prices. There is a happy medium there where people are making good money, and also where we're getting ripped off. Now, a bit of that, I would take a little bit of that out and keep that, as I said, a sovereign wealth fund, and I would use that then to build further infrastructure. But I'd take the infrastructure out of the government and the public servants and have an infrastructure commission that would have a 50-year view on where we should build these things so that it doesn't become an election promise and then election taken away, so that we would have to then fund, as a government, we would have to fund what is the best and brightest ways to build our infrastructure right around the country.
Love the idea of the 50-year thinking, long-term planning. It removes the election promise element from it. So we've had the education policy, we've had the law and order policy, the energy policy, and lastly, this was Eddie's final policy when he was challenged by his co-host Will Anderson to think as though he was the Prime Minister of the country, what would his platform that he'd be running on. This was on the Triple M Melbourne Breakfast Show yesterday morning, the Hot Breakfast.
But Ed, what's your final policy?
I'm going to cut the number of politicians. Going to do a gerrymander. I'm going to gerrymander it so that I'm never voted out. But no, it's just cut the number of politicians, pay them more so they get a better quality of field.
Oh, pay increase for politicians now.
Yeah. No, cut the number of politicians, but I'd like to have more commissions involved where you actually get the best and brightest. We saw last week,
okay,
we got the major business people together. They came up with some really good ideas on how to use superannuation funds to be able to fund business. Now, that was done in 5 minutes. In the meantime, we're running around in circles in Canberra. We can't get anything done. So we need to get some smart people. We need to get the grown-ups at the table more and more. I'd fix the NBN up. I'd put fun, arts and sport at the top of the list of things
fun,
that we...
Fun, arts and sport. Yep. There's
fun,
a slogan.
Arts and sport.
No, right. Because, you know, because it's all very well having hospitals, but while we're alive, let's live a little bit as well. We get the hospitals going. You don't
good
need
acronym
to...
for that as well. Farts.
Exactly. Farts.
Eddie Maguire for farts.
Fun, arts and
fun,
sport.
Fun, arts and sport.
Farts. You know, because I don't reckon our politicians spend enough time thinking, how can we make the place grouse? That's my policy. How do we make Australia grouse again?
So there are Eddie Maguire's policies if he was running for Prime Minister. I love the final one there of getting the best and brightest in politics, incentivising politics so that, as he said, the best and the brightest get involved because they're the ones that are going to be capable of steering this country in the right direction. 133353. I'd love to hear what your policies would be if you were running for Prime Minister. We've got Bill on the line from Maroochydore. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm going okay. How are you this morning?
No, just on my way to work, mate.
What do you do with yourself, Bill?
Security guard.
Okay. And at an industrial site, or whereabouts are you securing?
At a hospital.
Very good. Very good. And so what time's the shift kick off?
Kicks off at midnight.
Right. And a decent stint through?
Goes till 9 in the morning.
It's solid. Solid stint. Well, hopefully, does it get busy? I imagine that would be quite a busy time for a hospital.
You have your moments, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Bill, what are your thoughts on Eddie Maguire's obviously rolled out his policies there. Have you got some thoughts of your own if you were to run for Prime Ministership?
I have. I've got two policies I'd like to roll out. The first one would be not to spend useless amounts of money on postal votes. If I didn't have a parliament that could put their hand up and vote yes or no and vote with a conscience towards the people, I'd call for their dismissal.
I love that. I love that, Bill. I love that. And just quickly, no, actually, I'll come back to it at the end. You keep going with your policies.
Now, the money that's the money that's just been spent on our postal vote, and where I work, I see, well, probably half a dozen returned soldiers come in there, and they've got limbs blown off and pieces missing and what have you. And the government, in their wisdom, don't even issue them with a decent type of prosthetic. It's just, my opinion, a make-believe. Mm. They send them over there to get, you know, dismembered and maimed, and they can't look after them. But they spend their money uselessly on a postal vote, where they should have had the balls to stand up and say yes or no on behalf of the people.
Yeah. These are people that have gone out and fought for the country and defended the country, and they should, you're right, they should absolutely be treated with.
I think it's wrong, the amount of homeless soldiers, returned soldiers, we have in this country living on the street, when our government have sent them out there to represent this country, and when they come home, they just basically turned their back on them and left them.
Bill,
it's disgusting.
Prior to my filling in on the night shift here, on Triple M, I was working on a Sydney drive show hosted by Merrick Watts, and we spoke to a former Australian soldier who is now an author, who wrote his name's Rob Langdon, and he wrote a book called The Seventh Circle about his time spent in an Afghanistan prison. And he, in that interview, he spoke about the fact that, very similar to what you just said there, that the government has just spent however many millions of dollars on this postal plebiscite, and yet there are soldiers returning from stints in the Middle East who's suffering from PTSD and who are killing themselves.
That's right.
And there's these millions of dollars that are being spent on a postal vote, the money that could be better spent elsewhere.
$214 million. I don't know if that's correct, but that's one of the figures I heard tossed around. $214 million would go a long way to helping rehabilitate these guys and get them back on track, you know?
Oh, it would have a huge impact. And, you know, even if it wasn't that much, even if it was $10 million, $10 million spent on something that could have just been decided by them with a conscience vote, we elected these people to make these decisions on our behalf, and then they don't have the cojones to make the decision on our behalf. And they put in our hands.
I personally see Afghanistan as Vietnam all over again. They didn't learn their lesson there, and they haven't learnt their lesson again.
Hmm.
If the Americans put their hand up, yeah, we'll jump in with yous.
Yeah, it does seem like that. It is a little bit of follow the leader and with the US and us, isn't it?
It has been all.
Hmm.
And the other thing I would do is I would bring in the death penalty for sex offenders of children.
Wow, okay.
I'm sick and tired of it's every day of the week you pick a newspaper up or you turn the news on, there's been a child raped or murdered or neglected to the point of they've just passed away. It's disgusting the way our babies are getting treated in this country. Mm. And there's not one politician has said this has to stop. Now, I went to the voting on Saturday up here. We had a vote in Queensland.
Yeah, you had the Queensland election.
Yeah. And, you know, they all come and they stick their paperwork in your mm-hmm. hands, vote for us, vote for us. Mm-hmm. There were six of them in front of me. So I said, okay, which one of your parties is going to have the balls to protect our children? They said, what? I said, bring in the death penalty for child offenders, sex offenders, pedophiles, call them what you like, rock hoppers. They're all under the one umbrella. I said, which one of your parties? And they all just swallowed their tongue.
Hmm. Well, so I don't imagine it's a question they were expecting.
I said, why should I vote for you people when you can't even represent me?
Hmm. Yeah,
now,
no,
I feel very strongly about it.
It's the death penalty, 133353, if anyone else would like to share their thoughts on this, the idea of bringing back the death penalty. I mean, I guess, Bill, and look, I'm a new father, and so, you know, the whole issue of pedophilia has become a real thing for me in the recent times, because up until then it's a very serious issue, obviously, but now there's much more of a personal involvement having become a father. But the idea of the death penalty, I mean, hypothetically, let me say, what if someone were wrongly accused and wrongly convicted of the crime and then they were put to death. There's you can't take that back.
That's very true. But I maintain, if you get, you make a stance and you say, cross the line, and this is what you're going to face. And if it's guilty without any doubt at all, tried by jury, and this is what you're going to cop, you're going to get a lethal injection. Look at it this way. How many children have been deprived of their childhood and maimed for the rest of their life because they've been raped or interfered with or badly dealt with? They lose all trust. Look, I've trained kids. I've worked with kids for 38 years. And I've worked with some of these kids who have been through this, and they just have no trust. They have no belief in... A lot of them talk of suicide, and in later years they do suicide.
Yeah, it's horrible.
And like I've raised four children, and thankfully probably I was an overprotective father, but none of them have been affected by
congratulations
it.
Congratulations on the success of raising the four kids.
And I've now got a new grandchild, like 8 weeks old, and I just look at what this child has to grow up in the society. It's wrong.
Yeah. No, look, Bill, I think your stance and your policy around the importance of protecting our kids, because, you know, the adage, the children are the future. They are the ones we need to protect. And
the kids are our future. And these people who sit back and say, look at the kids of today. Yeah, the kids of today have been moulded by the society of today.
Yes, I agree.
When I was a kid at school, if I crossed the line, I got the cane. It hasn't bloody maimed me for life. It hurt at the moment. And the fear of Christ was when you got called up to the old boy's office. You knew you were going to get the stick.
Yeah, and you're right, Bill. Every child has the right to grow up without fear of interference, as you say, and it is our job as a society to... it's obviously the parents' responsibility, but our job as a society to create an environment where these kids feel safe. Bill, I want to say a big thank you for your call and your suggestions of policies regarding stop wasting money on these postal votes, as you put it, in the protection of our kids. You enjoy the rest of your morning, Bill.
Thank you very much. You have a nice night.
Not a worry. Will do. This is The Night Shift on Triple M. Liam Flanagan here, filling in all week for Luke Boner. And it has been a big night last night. It was in Sydney. The Arias, Australian Music's Night of Nights. All the fancy people were there. I obviously didn't get an invite, but someone who did get an invite was Triple M's head of rock, Jackie Kosolke. Jackie, good morning.
Good morning, Flano. How are you?
I'm well. More importantly, how are you?
Oh, look, I'm relatively sober. Well, I know that's not very rock and
roll. That's incredibly disappointing. In no way is that rock and roll.
My feet hurt, so I took myself home.
The fact that you are sober enough and not under the influence of drugs, which means you can come on this program, as the head of rock is bloody disappointing, Jackie.
Sorry, I'll do better next time. We've got our work Christmas party in 2 nights. I'm pacing myself.
Okay, fair enough. Now, talk to me about the Arias. How was it?
You know what? Really good night. Really good year this year, especially for rock music. I mean, I go into these nights and I put it through the filter of rock, which is, you know, it's my job, but it's also, you know, it's the nature of what we do, but it's also, you know, my personal style. And it was really great to see. It was a really interesting night because the big winners of the night were Gang of Youths. Which are a local Sydney band.
Western Sydney band, yeah, absolutely.
They won a couple of awards. They also performed. Really, you know, they're just such an interesting band. They come from several different backgrounds. The lead singer was talking about being parents of immigrants and stuff like that. Mm. They're through and through Aussie. And, you know, that's what Australia's all about.
And it's just great to see a young rock band, unashamedly a rock band coming through, because so much of music these days is heading down the electro and pop path. It's just 100%. Fantastic to see a genuine rock band that is unashamed about being a rock and roll band.
Totally. And, you know, they're one of those bands that if they're, you know, they pop up in your town, just go and see them and go and support it, and would highly recommend. So, you know, they won Album of the Year, which was fantastic. Paul Kelly picked up an award.
God bless the old fella, Paul.
He's having a bit of a career resurgence at the moment, which
Firewood and Candles is his new single that we've been playing a lot of.
Yes, and we're heading into How to Make Gravy season, which is Paul Kelly's Christmas song.
Absolutely.
So Paul, if you're listening, we'd love you to come and perform or just, at the or Boxing Day test.
Or
I
just,
don't know.
Or just make us gravy. But, you know,
yeah,
either
just
or.
Make us gravy. Yeah. Another surprise winner on the night was Jimmy Barnes won Best Children's Album.
Sorry. For what? For K-San? Have the tin lids reformed?
No, he's made a children's record for his grandkids. This will be one for your little girl, actually. It's a Scottish album.
Yes.
And he collected the award in a kilt with his grandson.
Was he a true Scot and nothing under the kilt?
Oh God, I do not want to know.
Jackie, you didn't get drunk, you didn't do any drugs, and you didn't find out what was under Jimmy Barnes' kilt. What was the point in you going to the Arias?
Oh, maybe I got a little bit drunk. I'm trying to act sober and professional right now. But yeah, Barnesy was a really cute moment. We'll get to him in a second, but the moment that did have the crowd on their feet was actually Barnesy inducted Daryl Braithwaite into the Aria Hall of Fame.
Daryl.
Of course, Daryl, formerly of Sherbet. So we got played a lovely package of Daryl in the, I guess, the satin shirts from Sherbet.
In his heyday.
And the mullets. Yeah, in his heyday. And then, you know, he had a bit of a career resurgence in the 90s with Rise and Edge were the two big albums, you know, as the days go by and stuff like that. And, of course, Horses.
I haven't heard that song. How does that go?
You know exactly how it
goes. I do know exactly.
Don't you reckon that's had a bit of a resurgence, especially around spring racing lately?
I don't think it's ever gone away. I honestly think it is the. If you could walk into any party, any Christmas party. In the coming Christmas season, you could walk into any Christmas party around this country, no matter the demographic of people. It could be on a work site. It could be in in an accounting firm. It
totally.
Does not matter. And if you put that song on, everyone will get involved.
Oh, 100%. Of course, Horses was performed by Guy Sebastian, Vera Blue, who's another great Australian artist, and Daryl Braithwaite. That had the crowd on their feet. Other great performances tonight, of course, Gang of Youths were fantastic. Mm. Harry Styles.
Yes.
I'm not even ashamed. I don't care.
For those people listening out there and having no idea who Harry Styles is, he's a pretty big deal. He's this generation's he's got the Mick Jagger style about him. He's from that.
Yes, he does.
The manufactured boy band that was One Direction. They're a big deal.
Do you think he's the Robbie Williams of the now?
Oh, yeah, that's not a bad comparison. For people who don't know who Robbie Williams is, Robbie Williams was a part of Take That back in the day. No,
yes.
Harry Styles, you know, he's a rock star.
Yeah, he is. He's probably one of the biggest pop stars on the planet.
Well, hey, you can change the conversation around this, Jack. You're the head of rock. Why don't you slip one of Harry Styles' songs into the playlist?
You know what? I just don't reckon, guys, I just don't reckon men are into it, you know? Like, I'm into it because I think he's really handsome.
I reckon you'd be more likely to see Jimmy Barnes release a kid's album. Oh, wait, he did that.
He did. He won an Aria for it. also, the show was closed, of course, paying tribute to George and Malcolm Young, both
yes.
Who have passed away recently, which it was a really lovely moment. A bit of a super group. I think I saw Chris Chaney, I could be wrong, Diesel and Barnsley performing ACDC's High Voltage close the evening.
Oh, how good.
Yeah, so good.
Oh,
so
well,
good.
Jack, I'm glad you had a nice night. Thank you for the wrap up there.
You're welcome.
You know, I'm fundamentally disappointed in your behaviour, though, because you're in bed. and the sun hasn't come up. So you've let us down, you've let the M's down, and I expect you to make up for it in the coming events that you're attending.
I know. What a disappointment. You know what? But as the aforementioned, it's head of rock. I mean, not my official title, but it's my unofficial title, and I'll take it. So feel
free. It's going to be taken off you if you don't lift your game, Jackie.
Well, I remember you said once on the radio when you were on Merrick's show, you said there's only two people who can make requests on the radio station, and that's Russell Crowe and me.
Yeah, and Russell's just called through, and he's requested Harry Styles. So thanks, Jackie. We're going to play some Harry Styles now.
I think you should chuck on the horses, and I'm okay with it.
I've got permission. You've heard it. Ladies and gentlemen, here it is, Horses by Daryl Braithwaite on the night shift. Thanks, Jackie.
Bye, mate.
133353 is the number. If you want to give us a call and have a chat about the news of the day, as we head to 4 o'clock, there is some more news coming through regarding Dom Burke. Media mogul, this is coming from the Daily Telegraph in Sydney, media mogul Kerry Packer is reported to have personally called TV star Dom Burke and ordered him to behave. This was revealed last night. Obviously, the allegations against Dom Burke have come forward from several women about sexual harassment in the workplace. And then yesterday it was revealed that the late Mr. Packer is understood to have called Dom Burke after Olympic swimmer Susie O'Neill lodged a formal complaint against the presenter in 2000. The champion swimmer said yesterday Burke made lewd sexual comments toward her while filming a story inside her Brisbane home. That Mr. Packer knew of the allegations against Burke cast doubt on Channel 9's assertions the network was ignorant of the claims at the time. It emerged as an insider described how Burke's TV kingdom was built on a culture of bullying and harassment. The former Nine employee said abuse was constant and continued from Monday morning's production meeting to Friday's end-of-week party. So the people continue to come out with claims against Dom Burke. It feels like these brave women that have come forward with these allegations against Don have broken the damn wall, and now we're going to hear more and more of these reports about Dom Burke's behaviour. 133353, it's been a controversial subject. If you'd like to share your thoughts on the matter, please give us a call here on the night shift. Another story that's coming through, which is an interesting one today, in the world of technology, researchers are looking to use Samsung virtual reality headsets to create 3D worlds to reduce patient pain. Now, virtual reality has been around for a while in one form or another, but it seems like this story is suggesting it could be used for really practical purposes here to help reduce pain. Researchers will use Samsung's virtual reality headsets and software to create immersive 3D worlds to reduce patient pain, replacing addictive narcotics such as morphine. It's quite remarkable that they can use this virtual reality in place of things like morphine. In a world-leading medical trial, it's deploying state-of-the-art technology to replace these drugs at Sydney St. Vincent Hospital. Already, the technology is being used to help people with visual disorders, treat spinal cord injuries, and rehabilitate stroke victims. If you've 133353, if anybody has been addicted to narcotics such as morphine, I'd love to get your thoughts on whether you think this virtual reality technology would be of any use. Samsung Australia has announced a major clinical trial using VR to lessen chronic patient pain, which will start at St. Vincent's Hospital in early 2018. The project is the first of its kind in Australia and one of the largest globally. Fantastic to see this sort of advanced testing being done here in Australia. The randomised clinical trial, which is in collaboration with St. Vincent's Research Foundation, will examine the way VR could address the pain felt by up to 400 patients. So, remarkable stuff. As I said, 133353, if you've been in the situation where you found yourself addicted to these narcotics, I'd be interested to hear your experiences and your thoughts on whether virtual reality worlds might be able to help you with that addiction. And another story that has come in that I just think I've got strong opinions on. There's no such thing as a free lunch unless you steal it. One third of office workers have had their lunch stolen by colleagues. The problem has become so pressing, inventive employees are using specially designed camouflage bags to make their succulent sandwiches look mouldy or resorting to lock-up lunch boxes. The Primo Small Goods Commission study of 577 office workers showed that about 33% of admitted lunch thieves said they did so because their colleagues' lunch looked better than theirs. Another 12% that said that they resorted to theft because they were hungry and hadn't brought their own lunch. You can't steal people's lunches. If you have a shared office fridge and you are nicking other people's lunches, your colleagues' lunches, shame on you. In fact, 133353, call up. We'll create a safe space. There's an amnesty here right now on the night shift on Triple M. No name. You can remain anonymous if you want to, but We're going to create an amnesty here right now on the night shift on Triple M. You can call us right now, 133353, admit to stealing your colleagues' lunches. I might give you a harsh word or two, but no punishments, no further punishments will be handed down. 133353, confess your sins here on the night shift. If you've been stealing your colleague or your co-worker's lunches, I want to hear about it. I want to know what the lunch was that was so tasty and irresistible that you had to steal it from your fridge. This Primo Small Goods has commissioned this study. The Good Manners Company founder Anna Moosen said lunch theft was consistently the number one workplace issue. I did not realise, it's a horrible thing to do, I didn't realise it was such an issue in Australian workplaces. And you know what? If the cowards who are stealing the lunches aren't brave enough to call up and admit to it, 133353, if you've had your lunch stolen in your workplace, give us a call and tell us who you suspect. Who do you think stole it? And what was it that got stolen? Was it, you know, something you bought or a bit of homemade gear? Love to hear from you. 133353. We've got Richard down in Hobart. Richard, we are being inundated with people calling from Hobart today.
You must be lucky.
Oh, absolutely. Beautiful place, Hobart. Was lucky enough to get down there a couple of years back, and I did the Three Capes walking track that you leave down near Port Arthur there over New Year's. It was a fantastic spot.
Yeah, I do a bit of fishing down around Hippolyte Rocks there. It's quite nice.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Richard, what did you want to have a chat about this morning?
Just a couple of things about the politicians, that the lurks and perks. Well, we don't get none when we retire. Why should everyone else?
You're right. You're right. I guess the thinking is that they are working in public service. So
they are, but we're paying for them too.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. It'll take a brave politician to ever bring it up, though, because you imagine you're sitting around in Parliament and you stand up and say, I think we should have a look at all of the perks we get as being politicians. I reckon it's going to get shouted down pretty quickly because you're surrounded by a bunch of people who'll be directly affected by it.
A bunch of people that we pay for, that all they're half a moon there for is just to get everything they can. And what about the poor worker that we are that get nothing when we retire?
I'm with you, Richard. I'm with you.
I just don't understand. And then they got a pay rise not long ago. Why couldn't some of them donate some of that to the appropriate places? They don't need it, some of them.
Mm. Yeah, that was suggested. That was suggested by a caller early on the show that when Malcolm Turnbull retires, a man who's independently wealthy of his income as a politician, surely he doesn't need that parliamentary pension that he'll be entitled to when he finishes. Surely that money could be better spent elsewhere.
Well, that's what I say too. What about a hospital or a nursing home for the elderly or something? That's 4%. I think they got all this year that none of them, half of them need. Mm. Why couldn't they direct that to a nursing home or something to do something good for the people, to give something back?
Politicians of Australia, if there's anybody listening, Richard in Hobart and a lot of other listeners to the show, strongly think that you should have a look and assess whether you really need the money that you're being offered once you're retired. Richard, thank you so much for your call. Best of luck with the fishing down there.
Thanks, buddy.
Not a worry. This is the night shift on Triple M. Good morning, Lindsay.
Yeah, g'day, mate. Hey, you were saying about people knocking off food in office fridges or work fridges.
Yes.
Now, I'm not one of the thieves, but I've had stuff knocked off of mine.
You're a victim.
I have been a victim, yes. So what I've done, I thought, no worries. So I got the tomato sauce bottle, and I've got the hottest of hot chili sauces I could find. And this stuff, I think it's called something like Satan's Freckle or something, because that's how it makes you feel.
Satan's it burns your Freckle.
It was something like that. I've got it, and I've put it in this tomato sauce bottle, or nearly a full bottle of it, shaking it up, and I tell you, it is shocking. So I've just left it there. Yeah. Hopefully I've got that prick that's been knocking it off, but it's not him, it's been someone else. And before I was working where I am, there was one other bloke that was knocking the milk off all the time. And I'm not talking just filling up his coffee or whatever all the time and not putting it back in the fridge.
Mm.
He'd take a carton home each night, sort of
thing.
What one of the blokes had done, he got some glue, like, you know, that white sort of glue.
Yeah,
like
the
clag
paste?
No, not the claggy paste stuff, that Aquadeer sort of stuff.
Oh, wow, okay,
stuff.
The real strong stuff, chill.
Yeah, because they use shitloads of that here at work, so I thought, fine, let's just fill that. So they filled the milk carton full of this glue. And I think that was the last one this bloke knocked off.
I would understand why. If he's got home thinking he scored himself a free carton of milk and he's discovered a daquadir.
Exactly. Stuffing.
Hey, Lindsay, thank you so much for the call. And hopefully no one's nicking your lunch anymore.
Nah, no problems, mate. I'll catch you later.
You have a great morning, Lindsay. This is off the back. Lindsay's called through off the back of a new research. The Primo Small Goods have commissioned a study of 577 office workers. It's showing that a third of people are stealing lunches. That's ridiculous. Lots of calls coming through about this one. Stuart, good morning in Cairns. How are you?
Hey, good, mate. Yourself?
I'm very well. You want to weigh in on the lunch stealing?
Yeah, years and years ago, I used to work in a sawmill and bring my own cordial.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a fella there, a bit of a bully, and always used to, you know, think he could do what he liked. So, I know this sounds a bit rough, but...
Oh, I'm nervous.
I pissed in the cordial for 3.5 years, mate. I don't know how many litres of my piss he drunk.
Hold on. Okay, you made the decision to relieve yourself in the cordial, and he's drunk it, but then he kept doing it?
I used to encourage him, just say, there's some cordial in the fridge there, Phil, if you want.
I mean, you must have, I literally have no idea what to say to that, Stuart, but do you still work with the bloke?
No.
Did you ever tell him?
I think a mate of mine told him a year after I left.
Oh, and did you get? You ever get a knock at the door?
No, I'm 2,500 k's away now. I'm up in North Queensland. That was down in a sawmill at Telegraph Point.
Oh, Stuart, that has absolutely made my morning, mate. Thank you for the call. You enjoy the rest of your morning.
No worries, mate. Have a good day.
This is the night shift on Triple M. We're discussing lunch thefts in the workplace. Apparently a third of office workers steal people's lunches. And 12% have said they do it because they left their lunch at home or they didn't bring any lunch and they were hungry. That's not an excuse to steal your co-worker's lunch. We've invited people who do steal lunches to call up. We've created a safe space. We're giving you amnesty here on the night shift. No one's been brave enough to call in and admit that they steal lunches yet. We've had a couple of people who've been the victims. Darren. Good morning, Darren.
Good morning. How you going?
Very well. You're in Melbourne. Are you confessing to stealing lunches?
No, I was a victim.
Another victim?
Yeah. Bloke used to, you'd put your pie in the pie warmer,
mm-hmm.
and the bloke would come and take a couple of bites out of it and put it back.
No, well, hold on. Okay. That's almost worse than stealing the entire lunch, because you think your lunch is still there, and someone's had a nibble on it, so you can't eat it.
No, that's right.
Yeah, you're right. I'd rather he took the whole thing.
Yeah, well, he never did. So, anyway, we thought we'd set this bloke up, and we got some plain donuts,
mm-hmm.
and we decided to melt a box or a packet of laxatives and make them into the old chock top.
Darren.
So, yeah, we fixed him up. He had to go running to the toilet, mate. Should have seen him. You ever seen someone squeezing his arse cheeks and running? Yeah, it's a cracker, mate.
Darren,
yeah, he never made it. And you could say he ended up with an extra package in his pants. Yeah, we fixed his bandwagon. I love telling the story, mate. It's a beauty.
Oh, Darren, that is a beauty. I'm starting to get a real understanding of the listeners to the night shift, though, because we've put this out there, and so far the revenge that's been sought is someone using Satan's freckle chili sauce. We had Stuart, who was relieving himself in the cordial that this bloke was stealing, and now you've just told me you've melted laxatives into a donut. So remind me never to steal any food from any of your workplaces.
Well, it's just not the right thing to do. You go to earn a living and some prick stealing your lunch.
Yeah, spot on, Darren. Hey, Darren, thank you for the call. Enjoy the rest of your morning.
Yeah, no dramas. We're actually going to Tassie this morning, so we might meet up with some of them in Hobart.
Oh, mate, they love the show down there. Get amongst it.
That's it.
All right, Darren, enjoy the rest of your morning. We got Ben on the line from Sydney. Good morning, Ben.
How you going, Luke?
I'm going very well, very well. I'm shocked and appalled by the behaviour of some of our listeners and the revenge they've taken on lunch thieves, but, you know, I'm adjusting.
Yeah. Mate, I dip into the lunches in the fridge every day, mate.
Hold on. We have our first admitted lunch thief here on the night shift. Ben, are you saying right now, we've created a safe space for you to admit this, so no judgment, but you steal lunches?
Yeah, mate, I take it. They've been there for a couple of days, you know, like a yogurt here, there, a yogurt or a
but
drink or something. They've been there a couple of days, mate. I'll save them from getting sick and shit, you know.
But Ben, yogurt keeps for more than a couple of days.
Yeah. Well, mate, there was a pasta in there the other day. It had been in there for 3 days, you know. So yeah. The bloke obviously didn't want to eat it, so I ate it.
Has anyone... How long have you been doing this for?
About 5 years. They all know I do it. I tell the new blokes. I tell the new blokes, mate, if you've got lunch, don't leave it in the fridge because I'll eat it.
Where are they meant to put their lunch?
Oh, they put it in there, but they know it'll get taken if it's been in there for too long.
Ben, what's the best thing you've ever scored of one of your co-workers' lunch? What's the best meal you've ever scored?
Probably KFC.
Are you stealing their KFC?
Yeah. It's been there a couple of days. You know, it looks like they're not going to eat it. Or pizza's another good one.
Yeah, pizza. But again, pizza's one that, you know, in my mind, you can keep pizza in the fridge for, you know, at least 3-4 days, and you heat it up, and it's still good.
Yeah.
Have any of your co-workers ever called you on it? Have any of them ever pulled you up?
No, I'm too big for them, mate.
I'm starting to get a picture here. You're the big unit at the office.
All know I do it. Yeah. They all know. Even my boss knows I do it.
Even you?
I asked them to write me a memo one day. I said, mate, put a memo out there. I'll leave it in the fridge.
Yeah.
Just to the bloke who left their yogurt in there, and that I stole.
Yeah.
I'm hunting you down because I've got sick off it. I've got food poisoning.
Oh. Now you're dirty on whoever's yogurt you stole because it made you crook.
Yeah, it made me crook.
Hey Ben, do you ever get worried? Because we've just had some calls from people who've taken revenge on their co-workers who've been stealing their lunch. Do you ever get a little bit nervous that some of your co-workers are playing funny buggers and doing stuff to the food they've left in the fridge?
Nah.
A bit of fear factor in the workplace, is there?
Give it a bit of a sniff, give it a shake, you know, have a look. And it's all good, mate.
Oh, Ben,
I know Jess does it too, you know. I've heard her on the
Jess,
radio.
Ben's calling you out.
It was one time.
I'm sure it's a couple of times, Jess, I'm pretty sure, you know.
Jess?
I do it to all the boys, know, like a few of the boys that'll be driving right now, they'll be going, Benny's on, that's him, that's him.
Hey, if you work with Ben and you know you can confirm his stealing ways, feel free to give us a call, 123-353. Ben, you've absolutely made my morning. Thank you for being brave enough to admit it. And good luck with whatever you score from the fridge this afternoon. I can't believe it. We got our first food thief on the line. Jess, producer Jess, Ben's called you out and said you steal food.
I've changed, Liam. I'm a new woman now.
Oh, well, I mean, I'm disappointed in you that you wouldn't just tell me this when this story came up. What's the best thing you've stolen from a fridge?
No, people here don't eat really great stuff, so that's why I stopped, to be honest. Disappointing produce.
Not only are you stealing people's food, you're also bagging out their menu choices. This is the Night Shift on Triple M, 12353, if you want to have a chat. It's a pleasure to welcome back onto the night shift, this gentleman, Big G, the Mayor of Brisbane. Good morning, Big G.
G'day, Liam. Look, just a quick call. I'd just like to generally thank you and Jess and all the beautiful listeners out there. I am full bottle now on Cashless Society, and I'd love to go back to that, in a nice way, go back to that restaurant and say Section 92 allows me to pay cash for meals. Mate, it was great.
Perfect.
Oh, mate, the feedback I got from that was awesome. My ear was glued.
That was fantastic. And just for those who might have missed it, yesterday on the show, you called up because you went down to a restaurant in Brisbane. The restaurateur told you and your mates that they could only pay with card. You would not be able to pay with cash. Mm. And so you gave us a call. And you're right, we have been absolutely inundated with calls about the idea of a cashless society. And as you said, we've had several people call up and confirm that it is illegal for these businesses to say, we don't accept cash.
Yeah, I just got so much feedback, and mate, it was just awesome. The people that come on board, and even Jess, I was talking to her before, she was even blown away. She said, I know, Big G, she said the calls we got. And mate, it was a genuine thank you, because you put it out. I knew our listeners would do great, and as used for many, many years. And I just wanted to thank you, Liam, for putting it out there for us.
No, Big G, thank you for calling up and bringing it to us. And it's a great community here on the Night Shift. I've only been a part of it for a short time, but you can feel the community feel between all the people listening and call up on the show. So thank you, mate.
And no worries, champion.
You have a ripper of a day, Big G. Always a pleasure to have you on the show.
Okay, mate. Bye, Liam.
You have a good day. We've got Ross. Good morning, Ross.
Good morning, mate. How are you?
I'm going very, very well. Where do we find you on this beautiful Wednesday morning?
Oh, just coming into Sydney, mate. Just coming into Sydney, keeping the dream alive.
Keeping the dream alive. What's going on? What's on your mind this morning?
You were talking about lunches.
Oh, yes. This is my new favourite story. A report's come out today showing that a third of people in offices are stealing their co-workers' lunches.
Yeah, it's pretty crude, isn't it? Many years ago, I had mine knocked off and my lunch knocked off at work. And I said to this other bloke, I said, some dirty, stinking, rotten so-and-so has knocked my lunch off, you know? He said, don't you complain. He said, my drink's getting knocked off all the time. Mm-hmm. But he said, he's going to get a shock when he knocks one off today.
Uh-oh.
And I said, and he used to bring bloody, ginger beer, 125 mil. Bottle,
you know.
And he said he's been knocking it off every day. He said, if you're going to get a shock today, he said, it took me a couple of days. He said, I filled it up.
Oh, no. Ross.
We didn't actually find out who did it, but he did find out his drink didn't go anymore after that.
I was about to say, that didn't disappear anymore. We're providing, I feel like we're providing a bit of a step-by-step guide on how to get people to stop stealing your lunches, because so far we've had someone who put chili sauce called Satan's Freckle in it.
Yeah.
You're the second caller who's told a story about someone filling it up let's call it what it is, piss. And someone else put glue in a milk carton that kept going.
Oh, that was a classic.
I'll tell you what, it's a lovely community we have here on the Night Shift, but we're a sick community at times as well. Hey, Ross, thank you.
Oh, look, it was great, mate. You're doing a good job.
Thank you for the call.
I love Lukey, but you're doing a good job too.
I appreciate the feedback, Ross. That's great.
No, it's a lot of fun, mate, and it's keeps you awake over morning anyway.
Beautiful. You enjoy the rest of your day, Ross.
And that bloody milk carton, that sugar carton that's listening too. On the other side, he has a shot of me every time I ring up.
Good on you, Ross. You keep calling in.
See you, mate.
Thanks
Bye.
For the call. Let's get to John. Good morning, John. You're also on your way into Sydney.
Yeah, just stopped for me half hour break.
Oh, okay. And how far out of Sydney are you?
I'm up at Kempsey at the moment.
Nice, very good. Now, you're also calling in about this lunch thieving that's going on in workplaces.
Oh, she's just gone on to hands free again. Stupid thing.
Don't stress, mate.
I just had it off. It's gone back on. Place I worked in years and years ago, and we all had our own lockers in a big locker room, and they were never left locked. You know, they were always open. You could even leave your water there and nothing get pinched. But a lot of food started disappearing and over a period of time, and everybody's getting a wee bit ticked off, so I actually ended up baking a chocolate cake, but I took a third of that in after I iced it. I placed the icing with a half a block of the fancy chocolate that makes you go to the toilet.
No.
So by the time the afternoon shift came on, they found out he was faking all the food.
I was going to say, you were able to identify the bloke because he was spending the afternoon in the toilet?
Yeah, he could shit through the eye of a needle.
Did you ever tell him? Did you ever tell him what had happened?
No, he never found out. Everybody found out who was taking their lunches.
Yeah, I was going to say, he didn't steal lunches anymore, John. That's fantastic, mate.
Yeah.
Thank you for the call, John. You travel safe, all right?
Cheers, mate.
Not a worry. This is the Night Shift on Triple M. We're talking, all these calls are coming in. If you have just tuned in, it's because the Primo Small Goods have commissioned a study of 577 office workers, which shows basically that a third of them have admitted to being lunch thieves, stealing their colleagues' lunches. Because they liked the look of those lunches better than theirs. Another 12% said they resorted to theft because they were hungry or hadn't brought their own lunch. We've only had one admitted lunch thief call in and explain his reasons for doing it, but plenty of people talking through how they got revenge on the people who'd been stealing their lunches. Good morning, Simon.
How are you going?
Good. Whereabouts in Australia do we find you this morning, Simon?
I'm in Berwick at the moment, and looks like, and I'm pretty worried about it, looks like I've just gone past an accident on Clyde Road in Berwick, and it doesn't look good at all. They've just landed the police chopper on the road.
Oh, so this is in Melbourne?
In Melbourne, yeah, in the southeast suburbs, and they have closed the road in both directions on Clyde Road.
Okay.
And the car has gone into a pole, and it does not look good at all.
Oh, thank you for the update, Simon. Fingers crossed. No serious injuries out of that. This is, though, just for an update, that's Clyde Road in Berwick in Melbourne. If you can avoid the area, please do so. And as I said, fingers crossed that there's no serious injuries out of that one. Good morning, Luke.
Good morning, mate. How are you, brother?
I'm very well this morning. Whereabouts? Did we find you in Sydney?
Yeah, mate, I'm in Sydney.
What part of Sydney?
I'm in Casula at the moment.
Very good, very good. Where are you off to this morning?
Mate, I'm off to Nowra, actually.
Oh, okay. Decent drive ahead of you, though.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, like I'm in the passenger, I'm going to sleep. Mate, you've been talking about the lunch thieves, mate.
Yes.
I've worked in construction. Years ago, I was on the site Barangaroo, the land lease job. Early on when our company started, it was only 6% of the job, so we had to share a lunch set with another trade. And every day, our margarine drinks were getting taken. And the day that pushed me over the edge is, you know, the individual coon packets of sliced cheese?
Yes.
Well, some bastard grabbed it and took a bite through all of them and put it back.
No.
I went to the site manager and I said, mate, tell him what's happening. I said, can we get our own shed? And he goes, unfortunately, mate, at the moment we can't. I said, no worries. The next day I brought in new milk and new margarine. Took the milk out, I pissed in it, filled it all the way up. Then I grabbed my old fella and I punched it in the margarine and left it begin to taste. So the next day I went and seen the site manager and I said, mate, don't worry about it. I've sorted it. He goes, well, what'd you do? I told him that afternoon, mate, before we finished, we had our own shed.
Luke, I am literally lost for words. Again, lost for words. Bro, I am never going to steal a lunch from anybody ever again. In fact, I'm going to bring in extra food just to make sure that what I've heard from you and everyone else this morning who sought revenge on lunch thieves never happens to me. Luke, thank you for scaring me straight.
No worries, mate.
Ah, this is the Night Shift on Triple M. Good morning to you wherever you are around Australia this morning. Liam Flanagan here, filling in for Luke Boner all week while he has a well-earned break. We've been talking about lunch thieves. Apparently they're everywhere. One third of office workers have admitted to stealing their co-workers' lunches because they look better than theirs, and another 12% said they've resorted to theft because they were hungry and hadn't brought their own lunch. We've invited a safe space here on the Night Shift for you to call up and admit your crimes if you are one of these people who has been stealing colleagues' lunches. Luke's on the line from Wollongong. Good morning, Luke.
Yeah, good morning, Liam. How are you going?
I'm going well. I'm pretty appalled by this news of people stealing lunches, and I'm even more appalled by some of the revenge tactics I've heard of from some of the Night Shift listeners.
Yeah. I'm just ringing up to confirm that. I work with Ben that called up, admitting to that he steals food.
You work with Ben, the lunch thief. We had Ben on the line who basically was unashamed about the fact that he steals people's lunches.
That's right. Yep.
Mate, have you been a victim of his lunch thieving crimes?
No, I haven't. Because it's been pretty common on Night Shift to letting new employees know that don't put food in the fridge, otherwise Ben will eat it.
So where do you put your food?
I've got my Esky in my truck with me and that, so I take my food with me. But it's usually day shift. They put their food in the fridge, and I'm pretty sure they don't know about him stealing it.
Such is Ben's level of theft that blokes like yourself are forced to bring Eskies to work, so you can store your food somewhere safely.
We're not forced to do it. Like we just take our food with us because we could end up having our dinner anywhere because we're on the road and that.
Sure.
But even the boss knows. The boss knows, like, because we'll have a toolbox talk before work, during the toolbox talk, he'll get up and go to the fridge and ask, oh, anyone own this? And if no one puts their hand up, well, yeah, he'll lead it there and there.
Hey, look, I got the impression as well from chatting with Ben that he's a bit of a big unit.
Oh, yeah, big Kiwi fella.
So there's a little bit of intimidation factor there as well. A couple of people maybe a little bit intimidated to say, hey, Ben, can you stop stealing my lunch?
Yeah, that's it, mate. Yeah, I definitely wouldn't. I'd let him eat my food. I wouldn't fight him for it.
Hey, Luke, thank you so much for calling in and confirming that, mate. And you keep that food of yours safe and sound in your esky.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks, Liam.
Good man, Luke. This is the Night Shift on Triple M. Good morning, Keith.
Yeah, bro, how are we?
I'm going very well. You're up in beautiful Cairns.
Yes, beautiful. Yeah.
Beautiful. What are you up to with yourself this morning? What has you up at these hours? What do you do with yourself?
I'm a baker.
Oh, you're a baker?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you're up at the crack of dawn. You'd almost be done for the day, wouldn't you?
Oh, I knock off about 7:30.
Okay, so a couple of hours to go.
Yeah, got a few hours to go.
Mm. What do you want to chat about this morning, Keith?
Well, I've always worked on salary, and it always worked for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I work for myself and then I employ other people, I put them on a salary because basically I work up with remote areas and you've got busy periods and you've got quiet periods. So working on a salary works out better because part of the year you work about 45 hours, 46 hours a week, about 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then you work about 3 or 4 months, around 38 to 40 hours. And then you work about 4 months, doing about 32 to 36 hours.
Mm-hmm. So it sort of balances out.
Yeah, it balances out. And to me, when you employ somebody, you explain it to them, how you work the wage out. Because I've always worked the wage out that if I'm going to pay salary, it's always got to be above the ward wage.
Yes.
You know, to cover it.
Yep.
And
this is in relation to, we spoke to Graham Wynn, our employment expert, about the fact that the average employee does 5.1 hours a week of unpaid work.
Yeah. But if you work for somebody who's always worked on salary and knows the gift of getting somebody and paying above the ward wage to explain to them exactly how many hours they'd be doing through the year.
Mm.
And then when you sit back and then in the quiet period when you're only doing 32 hours to 36 hours a week, you're still getting the same money.
So it's almost like seasonal work, really. You're getting, you know that you've got your busy periods where the expectation is at your work that you got to work a bit harder. You're not going to get any extra money at that time for it, but there's also going to be the lean parts of the year where you're not going to have to work as hard and you're still going to get that same sort of money.
Same money, yeah.
Yeah, and how do your workers find? Do they find that a fair agreement?
Yeah, because they get free. Because I used to give them free accommodation and free electricity and all that. You know, all they had to do out of their wages was buy food. You know.
If they're bakers, they can probably make themselves something pretty handy. I would have thought.
Yeah. You know, and when you live near a supermarket, they didn't have to drive anywhere. You know, and the pub's over the road. So they didn't have to go far, you know, didn't have to drive. You know, like, that was remote, that's up the Cape, you know, or TI.
Sounds like a pretty fair setup, Keith.
Yeah, and there's another thing, you're talking about stealing lunches.
Well, Keith, I'm going to have to get you to hold on there, mate. I've got a network commitment that I have to hit very shortly. This is the Night Shift on Triple M. Keith, there, just talking about stealing lunches. Amazing, the amount of lunch thievery that's going on in this country. It's quite disappointing, really, especially you, Ben, in Sydney, who's stealing lunches on the reg. This is Liam Flanagan. This is The Night Shift on Triple M all around Australia.